Welcome to Herb W. Morgan's Weekly Economic and Market Commentary, a podcast about markets, investing, politics, and profit. Each Monday, in less than 20 minutes, Wall Street portfolio manager Herb W. Morgan distills all the complex and complicated into the simple and sensical. Here's Herb.
Good morning, everybody. It's Herb Morgan, Senior Managing Director, Chief Investment Officer here at Efficient Market Advisors. This is my weekly economic and market commentary. I'm recording it on Tuesday, September 6th, 2022, as Monday, of course, was a holiday. As a reminder, you can follow me intra-week on LinkedIn or Twitter, should there be commentary outside of this weekly publication. This publication is available both in subscription form, in which case you are seeing the slides, graphs, numbers, and data that I am discussing, but it's also available in an audio-only format as a podcast called Slaying Bulls and Bears. And of course, it is available in all the different podcast formats. This presentation you are seeing and or hearing is designed for use with investors and financial advisors, each of whom are, of course, expected to make their own investment decisions. Nothing contained in this presentation should be treated as investment advice. There are no recommendations for the purchase or sale of any securities. This is purely for informational purposes only. Moving on to market performance last week, the equity markets really took it hard on the chin. I really think it was more technical than anything else. We had a big down year thus far. The markets became oversold in June. And then in July, they rallied technically. You know, it was a halfway reversal of the bear market, hit the resistance line and sold off aggressively. Almost, if you opened a textbook on technical analysis, it seems like that's what we're seeing. Why? Because I think the markets are just undecided from the fundamental perspective, whether or not the Fed will cause a recession, whether or not earnings reports are going to get negative in the third quarter, because they certainly didn't in the second quarter. But that's what's happening. Interest rates also eked higher last week. The 10-year closed at about 3.25. That sent the Barclays aggregate bond and the US 20-plus Treasury index down pretty substantially. High yield sold off with the bond market and the stock market. A lot of correlation with high yield, typically, and mid-cap stocks. So let's move on and let's start talking about the economic data for the week that we got last week. First, June house price data from FHFA shows that home prices are up 16.2% on a year-over-year basis. But I think as you can see here, do a little circle there, that red graph is coming down from nearly a 19-20% year-over-year gain. And we want to see that obviously continue to come down. That's important because it's contributing to, obviously, to inflation. S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index, same kind of thing, up 0.4% on the month and 18.6% on a year-over-year basis. That was below expectations, but you can see those monthly gains down here really going back to what's more normal, that sub 0.5%. And so that might bring down some of the inflation pressure in the housing market. And with some inflation pressures moderating, and quite a lot of numbers are, and as we get through the presentation, I've added a few slides at the end that I think you'll find interesting that relate to inflation. But then consumers start to get a little more confident. They feel better about things when they're not paying $6 for gas, as an example. Consumer confidence in the U.S. for the month of August rose to 103.2. That was well ahead of expectations, and that was on a long, about an 18-month downward trend before having that nice print for August. Present situation was up. Expectations rose. American consumer felt pretty good. It didn't hurt either that the stock market was up in July, and their portfolios rose as well. Moving on to jobs and job openings, the July JOLTS report showed that there's 11.04, about 11 million job openings in the United States. That's for about 6 million unemployed workers. In the United States. So we still have a ways to go. There's still a lot of inflationary pressure in that labor market, but I really caution people not to think about this as unilaterally bad news. I'm watching the financial news and so forth. And, you know, this is inflation. Well, the great promise of American capitalism and the great promise of things like, I'm going to go all the way back, the Kemp-Roth tax cuts and revolution from, 40 years ago to the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2018 or 2017. This is increasing the standard of living of labor, giving labor more purchasing power. And that, of course, is certainly good for investors as well. More purchasing of more products is more profits is great stock price movement. So I'm not overly concerned about wages rising. In fact, I'm happy that wages are rising. And I think we need to put that in perspective, because we all think that when wages rise, it's at the expense of corporate profits. But corporate profits, as I showed you last week, are at an all-time high. So we're doing okay. In August, the Chicago PMI rose a little bit from 52.1 to 52.2. New orders rose, but still below 50. So that says continuing to expect a moderation in economic activity, and not calling that a recession in the Chicago region as it relates to manufacturing anyway. Weekly claims for unemployment came out last week, as they do every week. They fell to 232,000. Estimate was 248. This again underlines that there is strength in the labor market. If we're going into a recession, weekly claims for unemployment are going to go up. They're going to go up substantially. First, you'll see the 300, then 400. You start getting north of about 350, and then I think you can start calling recession. But with weekly claims for unemployment this low, in a country this size, and the labor market as big as it is, and by the way, you'll see in a minute that labor force participation actually increased last month, tells us that we are not in a recession. Okay, we got the two jobs reports, the ADP jobs report and the Bureau of Labor Statistics report. We'll start with ADP, which had been paused for a few months as they reformulated their model in association with Stanford University. So that's exciting. Payrolls, according to their estimate, grew by about 132,000. That was well short of consensus. This is more of that disinflationary pressure in the economy. Still, according to ADP, we had 132,000 jobs. We didn't lose jobs. We added 132,000. Now, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which uses a different model, Bureau of Labor Statistics says we did add over 300,000, 315 to be exact. And that's on top of a massive 500,000 gain in jobs in July. Again, I just keep going back to this. Yes, we've got some inflationary pressures. We're going to talk about those as we go through the presentation today. But there's a lot of demand in this economy, so much so that removal of stimulus is absolutely warranted and it's absolutely necessary. In fact, the stimulus stayed in too long. And just because we're removing the excessive stimulus does not by any means suggest that the economy has to suddenly roll into a recession. This economy has existed on its own long before fiscal and monetary stimulus related to the COVID-19 pandemic. The other thing we saw in that is that the size of the U.S. labor force is back to the pre-pandemic high of 159 million people. I mentioned there's some more people entering the labor force. And if you remember what we were at the sort of the reemergence out of COVID, we were talking about people not wanting to go back. There's disincentives to go back. There was lack of childcare resources with schools being closed, et cetera. But we're now back to 159 million Americans working, which is the high of all time, and that's exactly what it was prior to the COVID pandemic. With rising wages, you have unit labor costs going up. Well, if demand was going down or profits were going down, that would be a problem. But we're not seeing that so far, as I mentioned earlier. Non-farm productivity fell. Obviously, that's just higher cost of labor. It's not that they're actually less productive. We got the old Marquette, which is now owned by S&P Global Manufacturing PMI for August last week. It stayed in expansion, 51.5. So we're there. We're just above that line of delineation. Could the Fed engineer a soft landing? That's really the big question here. ISM's manufacturing report for August also showed expansion, came in at 52.8. That was a little above the estimate of 51.9. New orders went positive, went above 50 to 51.3, and employment went above 50. This is sort of a Goldilocks kind of report. But what it did is it also sort of paved the way and gave the all clear for the Fed to be able to raise 75 basis points at their September meeting. They need to remove the excess stimulus, and they're certainly appear willing now, and they're beginning to do it. Construction spending, let's talk about that. July construction spending fell 0.4%. That was more than expected. And you can see that's back to back. You don't really see that too often, but construction spending was really ramped up because of ultra low interest rates. That's now backing off. That's taking some inflationary pressure out of the economy. Moving on to auto sales, still dealing with supply chain issues, mostly related to technology and computer chips. Auto sales at an annualized pace of just over 13 million, and really fundamental demand for autos is higher. It's in the 16 to 17 range, which is right up here, especially given all the new jobs. People like to buy cars when they have confidence in their ability to maintain their job and make their payment. This is what I've been talking about. Average hourly earnings gained 0.3%, 5% higher than they were a year ago. This is good news. We want wages to gain. We want employees to make more and do better and then have more discretionary income. And that is what an economy does. That's seeing an economy grow, and that's positive all the way around. Factory orders for July fell 1%. Back out transportation, they fell 1.1%. Let's talk about some of the CPI or some of the inflation metrics that are starting to roll over. First one is the Cleveland Fed's CPI Nowcast. This is a daily indicator surveying prices, and it's estimating or forecasting where the CPI is heading. And it's pretty darn good, pretty accurate. Well, that's down from about 8.9 in July to 8.2. Obviously, still has a ways to go. Fed's target is 2%. Gasoline prices, which had gone from, you know, nothing and gotten over $5 on the national average, now back down to about $3.79. So that's positive as well. Okay, not a lot of economic data this week. Monday was a holiday. It was Labor Day. Tuesday, today, S&P Global, the old Marquette Services reading, expected to be in contraction. ISM expected to be in expansion. Those two don't conflict too often, but they do on occasion. Wednesday, trade deficit, which is subtraction from GDP. Fed will put out its beige book, which is its board meeting book ahead of the September FOMC meeting, followed by regular weekly claims, consumer credit. I think the big item this week is actually going to be the ECB, the European Central Bank's decision on interest rates. They're expected to hike 75 basis points following in the footsteps of the US Federal Reserve, and then wholesale inventories on Friday. Not a lot in the way of earnings or other economic news. Could end up being a quiet week. It's really, really hard to say. Okay, don't forget, listen in on the podcast, subscribe. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll be back to you again in 1 week.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to download the slides for this week's podcast, please visit www.efficient-portfolios.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly commentary podcast in all the usual ways. And if you wouldn't mind, please rate us on iTunes and tell a friend.